Okay, let's get right to it. We have a very important hour coming up for you right now. They're all important. This one is very unique, though. Let me start off by reading just a little clip from USA Today. Battle for Ukrainian capital misspelled. USA Today can't even spell the word capital. Reportedly intensifying with explosions seen and heard in Kiev. Russian forces have reportedly moved in closer to Kiev early Saturday morning, and explosions were seen and heard in parts of the capital, suggesting an escalation of fighting with Ukrainian defenders. This according to CNN. You trust CNN? Take your chances. The cable network reported that operations by Ukrainian forces to repel the Russian advance were intensifying in the early morning hours of Saturday, Kiev time, not long after Ukrainian President Zelensky warned that the battle could be over by morning. This night will be very difficult, and the enemy will use all available forces to break the resistance of Ukrainians, Zelensky said in a late-night video message Friday that was widely circulated on Twitter. This night, we have to stand our ground, Zelensky said, surrounded by members of his own national security team. The fate of Ukraine is being decided right now. Right now, we get to talk to Russell Bentley, who is in the eastern part of that beleaguered country. Russell, can you hear me all right?
I hear you fine. Good to be
good.
Back again, Jeff.
Thank you, my friend, very much. You've got a lot of people around the world listening right now. So let's just take it from where you'd like to start. If you want to start with Kiev, that's fine. I just did that because we just got the story a few minutes ago. And it is interesting to see Zelensky say, this night will be very difficult, and the enemy will use all available forces to break the resistance of Ukrainians. He said it could be over by morning. So what's your take on that?
Well, you know, he said that the fate of Ukraine was being decided tonight. The fate of Ukraine is already decided. The Russians are not invading. They are liberating and denazifying. And the operation continues on schedule. There is some very fierce resistance from the hardcore Nazis, the war criminals that know that they will face justice inevitably once the Russians triumph over the organized military. But I mean, it's the outcome is inevitable. As the my old commander from the Vostok Battalion, Alexander Khodorkovsky, he made an appeal to Ukrainian citizens saying to not resist because the outcome is inevitable, and the harder the resistance, the harder the methods that will be used to squash that resistance. There's no possibility of Russia failing to achieve all their goals in Ukraine, and they're well on their way to doing it. One thing about Kiev, too, I'll tell you that, you know, and this is like insane. The last day or so, they just went out on the streets and they handed out over 20,000 AKs, 47s, AK-74s, you know, machine guns and ammo, you know, with no documentation to just anybody that walked up and wanted one. And, you know, by, you know, by by dusk, excuse me, you know, the murders and robberies were happening all over the city, as you can well imagine.
It didn't take long for the fabric of controlled civilized society to break down, did it? Interesting.
No, I mean, it was a matter of hours. And I mean, you know, of course, you know, this is a very cynical move on their part. They understand that, you know, these people, you know, without organization, without training, without any kind of strategy, you know, have exactly zero chance against the Russian military. The only thing that it's going to do if they resist in any way is get them killed. But, you know, the plan is that once Russia does take control of Kiev and most of, you know, all of Ukraine east of Kiev, then those weapons will be used by, you know, terrorists to
correct
make the situation more difficult.
Yep. That's
not only
that
for
seems
liberators, but for also just for the regular citizens of Ukraine.
Understood. That seems crazy to me. It's crazy to hand out that many weapons to people without training, without coordination, without any kind of structure. Wow.
A point that that I was making to somebody else. I've been working about 20 hours a day since this thing started, and I've been talking to a lot of people. But you know, when you see stuff like this, you know, and a lot of people will say, "Well, that's just crazy," you know, or "That's stupid." But you know, really, at some point, you know, you got to come to the conclusion that, you know, nobody can be that stupid. And that they're doing it on purpose. You know,
it's all part of the plan. It's planned.
It's evil.
Of course.
You know, it's intentionally creating chaos, creating, you know, more death and destruction and suffering on purpose.
And they'll use that death and destruction to push their case in the world mainstream media. You got it.
Yep.
It's a plan. Yeah. It's a plan. All right. Let me jump back to where you are. LPR, DPR. And the apparently 140,000 Ukrainian army troops that are still on that line, I guess they haven't attacked yet. What do you have?
Attacked.
Go ahead.
There are reports that Zelensky has called some of them back to, defend
Kiev?
Or secure Kiev and Kharkov, Kherson. So hopefully. You know, these troops will be leaving. But the amount of troops and equipment that's still on the line is a very real threat to, to the people here. They have blown up the water pumping station again. So many outlying areas are without water, which is a real difficulty. Even here in the center where we are now, we have water, but it's like maybe 50%. Of its usual pressure, and it could go out at any time. And you understand, you know, when you say that, you know, a city is without water, you know, people say, oh, well, they must get thirsty or something. Well, of course that, but I mean, think about cooking or washing or flushing your toilet.
Sewage.
All these things become
sewage.
You know, difficult
huge.
Or impossible. And
right.
You know, a lot of people in these urban centers. You know, they live in these big apartment blocks, you know, from the Soviet Union. They're like 5 or 9 story apartment buildings. And, you know, if you don't have a toilet, you know, and you live on the 9th floor, you know, it makes it pretty tough to go to the bathroom.
Well, they know that. And that's why the Ukrainian army blew the water pumping station up twice now. That's the second time I've heard, at least. They want this. They want this kind of suffering. I'm just curious if they're going to invade or not. And if they don't invade, they're sitting ducks out there because Putin, if he has to, he has thermobaric bombs. He's got MOABs. He's got some very non-nuclear powerful pieces of ordnance that he could use to annihilate those troops. And now I'm thinking if he uses those, let's say he uses thermobaric bombs. And let's say that the Ukraine army has a few hidden tactical nukes, and they start using those in return. I think all bets are off at that point. Anything could happen.
Yeah, I would be very skeptical of reports about tactical nukes. I mean, it is a possibility, but I would put it in the highly unlikely department. I mean, even if they had them, I think that it would be a stretch for them to actually use them because, first of all, the officers and leadership of the Ukrainian army are absolutely, totally corrupt. And they're like, hey, why should we blow up this suitcase nuke when we can sell it for $20 million to, the Arabs or something?
I understand
that, as you said, if they did use something like that, all bets would be off. And, you know, they would
right.
suffer the full might. At this point, the Russians are concentrating on moving into Mariupol and Odessa and also along the border from Kharkov to Kiev.
When you say moving in, Russell, excuse me, when you say moving in, how are they moving in? On foot, with heavy armor?
No,
what are they doing?
No, they're moving in jets, helicopters, armored vehicles, truck convoys. They're moving in hard and they're moving in fast. Airborne troops have been deployed. Air mobile helicopter troops have moved in, also taking over the major, you know, nuclear sites. Chernobyl has been taken over. Chernobyl is actually just north of Kiev. It's basically between the Belarusian border and Kiev.
Uh-huh.
And Kiev's only like, you know, less than 50 miles from the Belarusian border. Troops have come in from Belarus as well, Russian troops, and they are on the outskirts of Kiev already. Kiev is definitely going to fall. The resistance in some places has been fierce. The Ukrainians have, in my opinion, made a terrible mistake, and they've started posting propaganda videos of dead Russian soldiers, which is going to, they think that's going to break the morale or the will of the Russian people or commanders or soldiers themselves. It's going to have the opposite effect. It's going to be, the Kremlin's going to see that, and they're going to say, all right, no more Mr. Nice Guy. And it's going to be, you know, hands up now.
I find that to be appallingly stupid. I agree with you.
Yeah. And, it just seems like that the whole strategy of the Ukrainian government and military at this point is just to, you know, cause as much suffering and destruction and death as possible, you know, because they know they're going to lose. I mean, so it's like, you know, the German Nazis in Berlin in 45, you know, when they're like, you know, handing out guns and uniforms to, you know, 12-year-old kids and stuff, you know.
There's no doubt that what you say is correct, that handing out, let's say, 10,000, 20,000, however many AKs, 47s, 74s, I don't know. But those people are all going to obviously go to their deaths if they try to contest the Russian incoming movement into that city. They're going to die like flies. And that'll be PR that Zelensky and the others will use. Look how brutal the Russians are, shooting down these innocent civilians, blah, blah, blah. This war is being fought on levels that perhaps other wars haven't been. We're seeing now, you call them hackers, call them whatever you want, but I think there is a digital aspect to this war that is not being discussed as of yet. There are a lot of things at play here.
It is just the whole war, the whole since Maidan, has been a whole new, chapter in information warfare. And it's very interesting. When the war first started, you know, there was a huge upsurge, like even on VKontakte, which is like the Russian Facebook, which I recommend that everyone that's interested in getting real news should, make an account on VKontakte. It doesn't have the censorship of Facebook. It has actually a much higher quality of people and information than Facebook. But when the Russian liberation operation began, there was a huge upsurge in, pro-Ukrainian trolls and, just hardcore propaganda, disinformation. And then a couple of caliber missiles hit a specific place where, the Ukrainian army had their info and psychological warfare center. And all that stuff.
That's what it
was. Pretty much. Well, it didn't disappear completely, of course, but it did come down significantly.
It took it offline, shall we say? Took it offline.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Defense Minister spokesman Major General Igor Konashenkov said Russian forces have so far knocked out 211 Ukrainian military installations, including 17 command centers, 19 air defense missile systems, 39 radar units, 67 tanks, and 6 warplanes. The Russian military also said it seized a strategic airport outside Kiev, allowing it to quickly build up forces to take the capital. Is this true? That's the Antonov Airport, I believe. Did they take it?
Yeah,
do you know?
It is true. The majority of Ukrainian air defense and air force has been neutralized or destroyed. I just watched a video of a alligator attack helicopter, Russian attack helicopter, destroying a Buk air defense system that was on the move, and it was completely destroyed. It just it was going down the highway, and you know, these Buk systems, they're actually
four
vehicles.
Yeah.
And this alligator just came up behind them, and it was like somebody's dash cam along the highway, and they, you know, and then they drove by a minute later, and I mean, it was, you know, it was completely blown to pieces.
Go ahead.
Well, I also saw in Kiev, the Ukrainian air defense was managed to shoot down one caliber cruise missile, and then they were claiming that it was a Russian fighter jet. So, you know, I mean, it's that kind of disinformation and propaganda.
Yeah.
But,
well, the first casualty of war is the truth. We all know that. So
that is a fact, man.
It's trying to connect dots from people like you that give people like us a chance at trying to make make sense of it all right now. It doesn't look good for Kiev from the Ukrainian side. How could it? They've got no air superiority. They've really got nothing but people on the ground. I would think that most of those people on the ground will see the inevitable and would lay down their weapons and let's get this thing over with and get back to business as usual. The city is not going to be flattened. At least we hope not. That would be a shame. So the real estate needs to remain intact.
The Russians have been very careful not to to destroy any infrastructure or
right. Nothing random. It's all very, very carefully tactically picked. Yeah, they've been people need to remember
that with what NATO did in Yugoslavia or Iraq. You know, I mean.
Slaughtered.
You know, went in and flattened everything.
Yep. Yep. People need to understand that the Russians have been studying every square inch of Kiev. And just for our listeners, Kiev is the pronunciation that you use in the Russian-speaking East, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Because they've been flipping it over and trying to say it's Kiev, but that's the Ukrainian. It's their right. That's the Ukrainian pronunciation. Mm-hmm. And the same with Lugansk and Luhansk. We got a lot of confusion in that. Now, everything, and if you all don't think this through, you won't get it. The Russians have had people in Kiev. They know where everything is for probably years. This is 8 years on since the U.S. and Obama and Vicky Nuland and $5 billion overthrew Yanukovych and the legitimately elected government of Ukraine. Correct?
That's right.
So this is essentially a liberation of an overthrown country.
Yeah, it's a liberation from foreign occupation and genuine Nazi oppression.
All right. Now, I'm still very interested in how this, the line, I forget what we call it, the line of demarcation between Donetsk, for example, and the LPR, how is that going to play out? If those troops are pulled out, that's obviously an admission of a great defeat. If they're ordered to attack, it's going to be tougher for the Russians. Are you seeing, without disclosing anything you don't want to or you shouldn't, are you seeing many Russian troops? Are you seeing much Russian armor in the city of Donetsk yet to try to build up the defenses?
I have not necessarily seen them myself, but I have, you know, knowledge from people that, you know, are in the army that are on the front,
Understand.
That, you know, that the Russians are here in the Donetsk and Lugansk already. They will be helping with the defense in case of a Ukrainian offensive towards the republics. The Ukrainians are continuing to attack. They shot some Grad missiles yesterday. Their target was, you know, one of the biggest grocery stores in Donetsk. And they missed that, and they hit a house maybe 100 meters away and killed two people that were in their own home. They bombed a school yesterday. Two teachers were killed. You know, there's been, I mean, we shot down a Tochka U last night, which is a, you know, one of the biggest non-nuclear missiles that the Ukrainians have, the biggest, I guess. It's like a 1,000-pound TNT warhead, and it makes a hole about the size of an Olympic swimming pool.
Sounds like a V2 rocket.
No. It's much, much bigger than a V2.
I understood. But traditional explosives, that was my point.
Yeah. So like TNT.
Yeah. They shot it down with a surface-to-air missile. How did they do it? Do we know? Interesting.
Probably could even have been with, because this, you know, I mean, it's pretty old technology. I mean, it hits hard if it hits, but you can take it down with a Strela, a man pad, man portable.
Got it.
Although they could have used like a Pantsir, something like that. I'm not sure exactly how they shot it down, but they did shoot it down. And
Russell, how often are missiles and heavy artillery fire being reported in Donetsk and Luhansk now? Are they being routinely shelled by the Ukrainian army?
Routinely shelled. You know, it's multiple times per hour, pretty much every hour.
All right. So the only thing missing is the ground attack with armored personnel, carriers, tanks. I don't know how many tanks they have. So this could get real ugly if they do make inroads into Donetsk, for example. Did you ever recover the airport there, by the way? It was lost 8 years ago?
Yeah, when my first combat position was at the Iversky Monastery, about 400 meters from the new terminal of the Donetsk airport. And I was there in January 2015 when we took it back from the so-called Ukrainian cyborgs, the supposed to be their hard-ass special forces guys, but our guys were better, and we did take it. I participated in that battle myself, and it's been under our control. I mean, there's nothing really left there. It's a burned-out hulk of a building. The runway's all, you know, you can't use it for anything.
Flights are coming in. I understand.
No, I've seen pictures of it.
It'll be a while.
It's gonna have to be torn down before it can be rebuilt.
Understood. And what are you hearing about the Ukrainian naval forces now? I've heard that they've been pretty well sunk and destroyed. Is it
the naval base that the U.S. and Britain were building in conjunction with the Ukrainian Navy is now completely destroyed? All those little rubber dinghy boats that U.S. gave them, those are all gone. You know, everything, the Ukrainian Navy no longer exists.
Okay. So they got no air superiority. They got no air assets to speak of except missiles, it sounds like. The Navy is gone. They've got a lot of troops on the ground, 140,000, or they did have about that many where you are. And over near Kiev, they had about the same amount. They roughly split the army in half, if I remember correctly. Now you're suggesting that there are some rumors that some portions, some components are being pulled back to help in the defense of Kiev. How they're going to get to Kiev is a very interesting idea to think about. There's a lot of Russians in between the two. I guess the Russians are coming down from the west and the north, primarily. And that Antonov airport, if they have it, they'll be able to fly a hell of a lot of people in there and a lot of equipment, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And you're exactly correct. They're coming down. They're on the, you know, probably already at this point entering the suburbs of Kiev from the north and from the west. And it's only, I mean, it's going according to plan. You know, there have been casualties. This is war. But, you know, the Russians are winning. They're completing their objectives.
How many missiles are Putin's troops using? What are you hearing? Caliber is a terrifically accurate weapon. It's a cruise missile.
Yes.
Subsonic, yes. I believe, yeah, 600 miles an hour. But go ahead.
They, you know, I mean, they've been using plenty of them. You know, at this point, I mean, you know, like you were reading off before, you know, every, you know, major military installation. Interestingly, it appears that all 12 or maybe 14 of the U.S. bioweapons labs, U.S.-controlled bioweapons labs that were built and operated in Ukraine have also been destroyed.
Okay, I was going to go there next or after next. This is a very big issue. Bioweapons development, Americans don't know this, is being done in Georgia. It's being done in Ukraine. This is all American tax dollars. And there were 12 or 14 of them, and they are capable. I don't know if they're BSL-3, BSL-4, probably both, but they're capable of building some very, very deadly equipment. And they're destroyed. They weren't just captured, as far as you know. They were destroyed.
That's interesting. I mean, you know, and by like what you're saying, like thermobaric, something like that, that's, you know, hot enough to sterilize everything.
Okay, I was going to ask. I mean, you blow something up, unless you sterilize it, you got a problem. But go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, this was of strategic concern to, you know, the Russian Federation. It's, you know, a existential threat. You know, just a little bit of a certain virus can spread all across the country, you know, kill, you know, a little bit goes a long way when you're talking about bioweapons.
Well, yes. And, you and I talked about American mercs being over there with bioweapons. Anything else on that?
They're still there. It's the place where they were deployed. It was botulinum poison, which is one of the most potent and deadly biological poisons that there are, and you know, strangely enough, it's also what they use for Botox, like for chicks to make their lips bigger or something. But it can also be, you know, I mean, like one gram of it in powder form released into the air can kill 10,000 people or something like that. It's extremely potent. And and this is officially from the Ministry of Defense of Russia, not even DPR. I mean, although DPR has also confirmed it through their intelligence, but it was Shoigu himself, the Minister of Defense of Russia, who announced that in October 2021, a shipment came in of the antidote for this poison. And then after the antidote got here, then they brought the poison in. And supposedly it's been released to the control of the mercenaries, U.S. mercenaries, that are in the city of Avdiivka, which is about maybe 15 miles from here. It's a major Ukrainian army base position, and it's actually right across the line from where I used to work in 2017. In Iznovata, and I have a lot of friends in that town, both soldiers and civilians, and it's been surprisingly quiet in Avdiivka. Like yesterday, they fired one shell the whole day, you know, and usually that was one of the most troublesome spots, certainly back when I was there before. You know, it was a lot of shooting there every day, but it's been surprisingly quiet, so, you know, it's... You know, it's like they always say in the, you know, in the movies, you know, the cowboy movies or something, it's like, it's too quiet, you know.
I understand. I don't know that it would be very smart for anybody to open the door to biological weapons at this point. Like you said earlier, showing images of dead Russian soldiers, pretty stupid. The result could be 10 times that which they may think they're gaining by showing such footage against them.
Sure.
I don't know. I just, it's very interesting to me that they did knock out. And I have got a map up on the homepage showing, if you look for the headline, it shows an overlay of the first wave of targets of the Russian military and the location of these biosafety laboratories that have been apparently destroyed. Almost the same overlay. So that the Russians knew, and they went after these labs, apparently, first. They wanted them out, gone. So that's fascinating.
Sure, because, I mean, one of the other things we've heard from Avdiivka is that there's a big chemical factory there. And supposedly the Ukrainians have rigged explosives to some big tanks of like ammonia and stuff like that, so that if they retreat, they can blow up these tanks and send a toxic gas wave across Iznovata. And so, you know, there's no telling how crazy these guys are. People in the United States should also really understand that this is not just, you know, someplace far away. This can still escalate. Stoltenberg announced that NATO was going to send, you know, more weapons and ammunition to Ukraine, you know, which, of course, is really pouring gasoline on the fire. It appears that there may have already been an agreement reached between Russia and the West about how Ukraine is going to be divided up. I think that perhaps Russia has agreed with U.S. and NATO that if they don't go further than a certain line, which is west of Kiev, but not far west of Kiev, that you know, NATO will agree not to you know, become, you know, directly involved. It's rumor, it's speculation. There's no hardcore proof of it, but it's what's indicated is happening. So
story, you know, yeah, we had a story yesterday. The Pentagon, and you would assume Biden had his name on it somewhere, although it probably didn't mean much, sent another 7,000 American military personnel to stand in the NATO lines. I'm not saying they were going into Ukraine, but they were going over there into Eastern Europe. 7,000 more troops. That was a story yesterday. But again, I want to caution everyone, the first victim in war is the truth. So we don't know. These stories can be thrown out all over the map, and nobody will be the wiser. Now, you've got to be careful before you jump to conclusions. One story I want to ask you about. NATO allegedly last week flew in about 100, what the hell was it? 100 tons of 5.56 ammunition. Now, that's not standard issue ammunition for the NATO, the Ukrainian military. That's NATO ammo.
That's
why
right.
Why would they have flown in? Yeah, go ahead.
That's a bit of a mystery. You know, it was flown into Borispol Airport in Kiev. It was 100 tons. 5.56 is like the M16, M4
yep.
carbine
yep.
round. Also, there was 50 caliber ammo, 40 millimeter grenades for the Mark IV and the, you know, grenade launchers. And this was all, you know, U.S. NATO caliber ammunition. It doesn't work in the Ukrainian weapons, which are both almost completely
AKs.
Based on Soviet
yeah.
design.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kalashnikov, yeah. Makarov pistol, you know, the Uchos machine gun. So, you know, it was weird that they sent 100 tons, you know, a whole, like, 747 cargo plane full of this type of ammunition to Ukraine, and perhaps it's to be pre-positioned along the line that the Russians and NATO and U.S. have agreed to, so that...
So you're talking about peacekeeping applications, possibly.
Well...
Down the road.
Putting, you know, the word peacekeeping and NATO in the same sentence.
I'm being facetious.
I understand.
Yeah.
But it is entirely possible that under, you know, some secret non-public agreement, you know, NATO forces, you know, will come in into the actual Ukrainian territory, you know, with Russian permission and the stipulations that they don't fire a single bullet at Russian soldiers and that they don't advance beyond a predetermined line.
Got it.
In which case, you know, that's, you know, that lets all the worst Nazis get away by fleeing west. Which is very unfortunate, but you know, the arm of Russian justice is long, and their memories are long too. So just because they get away for now doesn't mean they'll always get away.
Right.
At the same time, that gives the United States some face-saving, you know, bravado, where they can say, "Well, we stopped the Russians at the line," you know. Maybe they got Kiev, but we stopped them from moving into Western Ukraine.
I got it. In Western Ukraine,
there's really nothing there except some very hardcore Nazis and a bunch of cow fields. So, I mean, there's really nothing there that's of any significance, either industrial, economically,
right.
agriculturally.
Right.
You know, it's the least important or interesting part of Ukraine. And all the good stuff is in Kiev and eastward. And if Russia takes that, then it doesn't really matter. I figure if the line goes from, like, basically Chernobyl on the Belarusian border, northwest of Kiev, you know, this also gives the Russians, you know, all of the Dnieper River.
The whole thing. All the way down.
Yeah, well, I mean, from where it comes into Ukraine from Belarus.
Okay.
You know, so that's a major natural resource, you know, by any measurement. If they go from Chernobyl on a line southwest to the northern tip of Moldova, you know, there's certain natural features that make that a, you know, somewhat defensible mm-hmm. line of demarcation. And then they get all the good stuff in Ukraine.
Okay,
it gives them the buffer zone that they were looking for.
Got it. Two things. You feel confident about that 100-ton shipment of 5.56, which is the same as 0.223 for a lot of you people out there who are hunters. It's the same. It's interchangeable round. And basically, it's a 22-caliber bullet with a hell of a punch behind it is what it is. So that's 5.56. Yep. The normal round for an AK-47 is 7.62x39. That's a different, it's more like a 30-30 round. It's a different round entirely. So it doesn't work in Ukrainian army weapons. So somebody's planning something already. That's a very interesting development. Now, let's go down.
I should point out, that AK-47s are still used, but considered pretty much obsolete. The AK-74 is the predominant rifle of both Russian and Ukrainian forces and DPR forces. That's what I have, an AK-74. And it shoots a 5.45. So it's basically the same kind of theory of, you know, a very
22
fast,
caliber,
small, light
hot,
bullet.
A hot load behind a 22 caliber round. That's about what it is. Interesting.
But 5.56 will not work in AK-74 or AK-47. I mean, you have to have the right caliber.
What's an AR-15 round is what it is. Well, we'll see.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, let's go down to Odessa, which, for those of you who are not familiar with Ukraine, is in the south, southeast, I guess you'd say, and it's on the water. Is this going to give the Russians a warm water port that they would love to have? I mean, we know they're in Crimea, but this will expand their naval facilities, will it not? They already have
it. Yes, it will.
They took it.
Odessa has been you know, a major seaport for centuries. It's on the Black Sea. It's a big city, an international city. It's a very historic city in Russian and Soviet history. It was one of the first places that the Soviet Revolution began with the battleship Potemkin. It's gonna, the people there are ethnic Russians, and will be very, very, very happy to see their city liberated from Nazi oppression. There was, of course, the famous massacre there in 2014.
That's right. I remember that. Yeah.
And there's people that have been, you know, doing what they could against Nazi occupation ever since then. So it'll be, you know, and there are troops. They've been air mobile troops have landed from helicopters. There have been some amphibious landings as well. The whole city is not yet liberated, but it is certainly on its way to be. There are Russians, you know, exactly, you know, inside the city limits of Odessa at this point.
Okay. Zelensky is now saying, this is just minutes ago, that an all-out assault on Kiev is imminent. That means the Russians must have moved a lot of men and equipment up into position very quickly to be ready to do this as fast. So we will see. Updates from The Guardian. Prominent Russians joined protests against Ukraine war amid 1,800 arrests. So there's always that. Fighting reaches Kiev as Russian invasion intensifies. What we know so far as Russian troops advance on Kiev. So they got a pretty good rundown. The Guardian doesn't do a bad job. I'm not saying it's to be believed in every sense. It's largely fiction. So you got to pick your way through it. Go ahead.
Okay. There's a much, much better, more interesting alternative to The Guardian. It's called The Off Guardian. And it's like an independent alternative version.
I know it. I know the site. Let me find out what they're doing.
Excellent site. But you understand, like, when The Guardian's talking about these artists and liberals that are decrying the war, I mean, you know, the people here in Donbass and most Russian people, they hate those people. I mean, they hate those people because, you know what? I mean, and it's been a big thing on the V-Contact and social media in Russia and here in Donbass. You know, they say, you know, and it's the same thing with these people in Ukraine that are saying, oh, stop all the killing, stop the war. You know, for 8 years, you know, we've been getting massacred here in Donbass, getting bombed every single day, women, children, you know,
Right. Civilians
right and left. And they didn't say nothing. And now it's like, oh, we have to, you know, hold hands and sing Kumbaya. You know, and it's abject, in-your-face hypocrisy. You know?
Perfect word. Yeah. Well, I caution you, when you read The Guardian, consider that it could be science fiction. The Off Guardian is saying not anything with any specificity that I've been able to find so far, like you are. They're talking in general terms about what's going on. But give us, we only have about 6-7 minutes left. Anything in particular that we need to know at this point about what we might expect? I could rephrase that and ask you how long you think Kiev could hold out. 20,000 people with AKs, not going to do much except get themselves killed, as you said.
Yeah, I mean, you know, disorganized resistance is not really resistance. It's futile. You know, I mean, the thing that people in the U.S. that are listening to this need to understand is that, you know, it's still a very volatile situation. It can go in any direction. It can, you know, blow up in your face. You know, I mean, if, like you said, if there is some kind of biological weapons attack, if there is some kind of tactical nuke or some, you know, totally terrible false flag or, you know, atrocity.
Right. We
can't Putin's
rule
already
that
said,
out
he said, we're gonna hit the places where the attack came from, and we're gonna hit the places where the orders for the attack came from. And He's not kidding. And he specifically warned the NATO countries yesterday. He said, if you get directly involved here, we will bomb you. We will bomb, you know, not just the soldiers that are in Ukraine. We'll bomb your headquarters in your cities, in your capitals. You know, I mean, he's literally said that. And so there is still a real potential for this to go off the rails and become a, you know, European or even world war. So hopefully, and it's, you know, the Russians have made very clear their objectives, that it's a limited operation to liberate and denazify Ukraine, and they're fully capable of doing that, and anybody that gets in their way is going to suffer the consequences. But, you know, the people in Washington, D.C., or the people that are calling the shots, you know, they're not really, you know, no one can really know what they're going to do. They can do something, you know, totally criminally insane that could change the whole parameters of everything here in a heartbeat, you know. So
yeah.
Hopefully it won't. Hopefully it will be a quick, relatively bloodless operation. You know, this the Russians are going out of their ways. They are literally at this point, although they may very soon get extremely tired of it and change their tactics, but at this point they are actually taking casualties of their own because of their carefulness and reluctance to endanger civilian life or even civilian infrastructure. You know, of course, if Russia is going to liberate Ukraine, then they have a certain degree of responsibility for it, and the last thing they want is mountains of dead bodies or, you know, totally destroyed cities like Grozny or, you know, Sarajevo. So they're trying to be careful. They're only trying to eliminate the organized military threat and liberate Ukraine from a foreign occupation. You know, and these people, you know, anyone that, you know, that says Russian invasion, you know, should be, you know, well, personally, I think slapped upside the head, but at least you can verbally correct them and say, well, you know, it is an invasion to the same degree that the Allied invasion of Normandy on June 6, 1944 was an invasion. You know, because it's,
well,
it's liberated from Nazis.
Yeah.
And foreign occupation.
The sad thing is people don't remember what happened 8 years ago. The Americans literally went in there and overthrew that government. Yanukovych was banished. I guess he's still in Russia. And they overthrew it.
I'll tell you something very interesting. It was exactly the operation began on February 22nd, 2022, and it was exactly 8 years earlier on February 22nd, 2014 that Yanukovych fled to Russia. You know, that was basically he was overthrown. So it was exactly 8 years later.
No coincidences. I don't believe in coincidences much.
No.
That is kind of strange. Okay.
And then February 23rd, of course, was the day of the defenders of the fatherland. It's the day that, you know, people here you know, commemorate and respect those who have and those who do defend Russia and the Russian people. And so, you know, it's some poetic justice, and it's very, you know, I mean, it's the Russians have the right, they have the reason, and they have the power to do this, and so they're doing it. And it's, you know, whoever resists it, it's like resisting a tornado or something. You know, it's not going to work out well for them.
Well, Putin's statement, we're going to go after the source of the attack, and we will go after the people who ordered the attack. I've never heard that laid out before, and there's one thing that Putin is known for here in the West, and that's keeping his word. When he says something, he does it. So I tell you, if this is being run out of the Pentagon, who knows? They'll find out. They'll know. 8 years ago, it was run out of the Pentagon to a large degree. Maidan, the whole thing. Internet disruptions across Ukraine. Do you still have internet service now? I guess you're online with us here. But,
yeah, I'm online right now. It's It's been kind of sketchy. I think it could be explained by some interference from Ukraine or from the West. It could be explained by the fact that probably everybody in the whole city of Donetsk and all around the region is on the internet. I mean, the government has told people to stay off the streets as much as possible. So people are sitting at home. They're, scanning the net for news, see what's happening.
Sure.
So heavy traffic. But so far it's working. Hopefully it'll keep working. The water is very sketchy right now. And the electricity goes on and off. But so far so good. In the center of the city, the utilities are the best of, of any area of Donetsk. So that's where we're at right now.
All right. Russell, thank you for being there. Thanks for taking the time. Thanks for keeping me up to date and all of us. Be safe, and let's hope this thing ends appropriately sooner rather than later.
Amen to that, brother. Thanks again for having me, Jeff. Good talking to you.
Okay. All right, Russell. Good night. Take care.
Okay.
Russell Bentley, Texas. We'll be back. Hold on.